is a certain word over here. No better word. All right. Okay. We're good? The Gemara that we are continuing to study focuses now on impaired fuel for your Shabbat lamps. I'm using the word lamps, not candles, because in today's day and age, most people use candles, but once upon a time, candles didn't exist. We used fuel, used oil. Flammables. Now, in the Mishnah, we talked about a number of different fuels which were proscribed, which should not be used. And the Gemara at this point on Daf Chafei Amud Beis, near the very bottom, 25b, towards the very end of that page, introduces us to a Braisa, which is a codicil to the Mishnah itself. And in this Braisa, we hear about a different kind of fuel, which should also not be used on Friday night. Tanya. We learned in a Braisa. Tanan is a Mishnah. Tanya is a Braisa. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Ein madlikin bitzari. You should not light the Shabbat candles, the Shabbat lamps, with tzari. Now, tzari is one of the ingredients in the ketoret and the incense. We say that tzari is sraf hayotze me'atz haktaf, which is translated as balsam, and I don't even know what that means, but and I don't know if it's exactly what people refer to when they say balsam today, but it's a certain kind of tree or vegetation, and when tapped, there can be a resin, and that resin kind of drips, and then will be harvested or collected, and the result is this unusual kind of flammable substance, which is called tzari. So tzari is coming from ketaf, balsam trees, balsam vegetation, and tzari is the liquid form, the flammable liquid form or fuel that's harvested or derived from it. Okay, fine, that's a statement. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, you don't use tzari for your Shabbat table. Don't use tzari. Why not? Well, we'd like to find out why not. Now, I should tell you that one of the things that balsam is known for is aroma. So this is aromatic oil, actually. That's why it was one of the ingredients in the ketoret, which is comprised of at least 10 very aromatic spices. There is an 11th aromatic spice called chelbeno, or galbanum, which is not aromatic in and of itself, but it has this unique property of sharpening all of the aromas. So even though it has a foul aroma itself, by virtue of it being blended and mixed in together with the other incense, it causes everything to be that much more pungent, which means piercing, that much more sharp. So at any rate, we can be pretty sure that if tzari is one of the ingredients in the ketoret, that it's aromatic and it has a beautiful smell that's attached to it. So the Gemara now begins to analyze this braisa. Omar Rabba. Rabba said, the reason that we should not use tzari is mitoich shereichoi noidef, because its aroma is pungent. It has a very pungent, very piercing, very intense aroma that comes along with it. So what's wrong with that? That sounds like a beautiful way to light Shabbos candles. Aromatic Shabbos candles. You sit down at the Shabbos table, you have light, and you have aroma. But the Gemara says, the problem is that we have a concern. And the concern is Gezeira, we made a decree. The rabbi said, don't do this, Shema yistapek mimenu, lest people actually use the oil for aromatic purposes. So this is found elsewhere in the Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Beitza on page 22, the Gemara tells us, as a matter of fact, that if you have a container that's lit, oil is burning, not all of the fuel is on fire, there is just a wick and a small fire, but it's in a container of fuel. So if a person were to add fuel, then he becomes implicated in kindling a fire, because eventually that fuel will be burnt, and you added it to the flammable fuel that's right now being consumed by fire. And if one takes away fuel, if you subtract or detract from the fuel, then you're guilty of being mechabe, of extinguishing a flame, both of which are not permitted on Shabbat. So because both of these things are not permitted on Shabbat, so therefore we have a problem. Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says this, Shema yistapek mimenu, lest you take from it, lest you utilize it. V'tanya b'teisefta, we learn in a teisefta. And I don't know why Rashi alludes to the teisefta, but really this is found in Masechtas Bei itself. The Gemara over there probably is quoting this teisefta. Teisefta, by the way, is the codicil that was added on to the Mishnah. There are a number of different Tosefta's, Tosefta of Rav Chia, Tosefta of Rav Oshia, but essentially after Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi closed the Mishnah, there were a number of other collections of Jewish law that were added as a Tosefta. This Tosefta is quoted in the Gemara in Maseches Beah on page 22a. This particular Tosefta is found in the 12th chapter, the 13th halacha, the third halacha. That's where we find this Tosefta, what Rashi alludes to. So v'tanya, we learned about Tosefta. Tanya would be a brisa. Tosefta is a codicil, a collection of brisa. Hanoisen shemen l'neir, a person who adds oil to a lamp that is lit, chayiv mishumaver, he is going to be held guilty. He's culpable of incineration, which is not permitted on Shabbos. V'hamistapek, and a person who subtracts, takes away fuel, chayiv is also guilty. Mishum mechabe, because he is extinguishing. I didn't extinguish anything. Well, this fuel was going to be burnt. If left to its own devices, all of the fuel in the container would eventually be consumed as the fire would burn itself down to the final vestige of whatever was flammable. And since you took that away, something which was already ordained to be burned, or something which was in theory already burning, because all of the liquid is kind of homogeneous, so therefore, by taking away from it, essentially you subtract it. It's as if you caused the flame to go out prematurely. So that's a problem. That's a problem. Here's an interesting modern twist on this business of Mishum Mechabe. So you know they have these Shabbos clocks. And the Shabbos clock is a fairly simple mechanism which will simply enable your lights to go off on Shabbat and go back on Shabbat. And some of it is very crude. Today we have smart houses and everything is digital. But the old-fashioned Shabbos clocks, which I don't know, I still use them in my house, a simple mechanism, and it's got a series of pins, and the pin trips the switch. So when the switch comes across the pin, if it's tripping one way, it turns the lights on. If it trips the other way, it turns the lights off. By moving the pins, you can change the time. It's very crude. It's technology of 1950, but it still works. So the question becomes, if the lights are on, can I simply take the pin out? Which would mean that the lights wouldn't go off. The answer in principle is yes, because the lights are on anyway. And the fact that the light would go off automatically, if for whatever reason I needed to keep the lights on, I can simply remove the pin, and that in that case, when the clock piece will go around its dial, nothing will trip the switch, and the lights will continue to remain on.
You can't put it back in.
However, I cannot move the pin closer, because if I moved the pin closer, I accelerated or brought closer the act of closing the light, which is like mechaba. You can't move it
either way.
Well, not to be turned on earlier. Certainly
or
you can't.
To be turned off.
That's the modern example, quasi-modern example of adding shemen, taking shemen away. I just thought that was interesting. So at any rate, at this point we've established that Rabbah said the teaching of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who says that one is not permitted to use tzari, this aromatic balsam oil, for the Shabbat lamps is because we're concerned with the fact that it smells beautiful, and without thinking, somebody might reach over and simply remove a little bit of oil and use that as some perfume or cologne or something to make themselves smell nice. And that's a problem. That's a problem. So we have many things which are not permitted on Shabbat because somebody might mindlessly do something. People don't think twice when this is kind of everyday behavior. It becomes second nature, becomes mindless. So we have these fences in place, because if you walk on a tightrope, eventually you're going to fall off. So it's a good idea to have guardrails to make sure that we don't fall off, and even if somebody might end up in that situation, there's a guardrail, there's something that protects him, that disables something from happening.
Similar situation as ladling out soup?
No, not connected to ladling out soup. That's not a guardrail, that's an actual issue or problem. But it's a similar situation to some people who cover the switches of their lights on Shabbos. Why? Because people flip switches mindlessly. So unless everybody's really in Shabbos mode, it's a good idea to have this little cover. And if you cover the switches, you don't go wrong. What's similar to is covering the fire. When you leave something on the fire, you cover the fire. Because second nature is, somebody walks into the kitchen and smells something burning. What will they do without thinking twice? Lower the fire. Or, the guests are coming soon. It's still not hot. Without even thinking, you raise the fire. That's a problem. Okay. So the Gemara seems, this is fairly simple, fairly straightforward. Rabbah tells us, this is very easy to understand. It's the aromatic nature of this oil that's problematic. Amar le Abaye. Abaye comes along and he says, one second. You're telling me the problem with Tzari. Is that Tzari on the next page now on Daf Chavov? You're telling me the problem with Tzari is that it is aromatic. And because of the aroma, somebody might use it to perfume themselves. Lema mar mepnei shehu off. Why doesn't the master, meaning referring to Rabbah, respectfully, why Rabbah, why wouldn't you say Rabbah was Abaye's teacher? Rabbah was his protagonist, Rabbah was his teacher. So Lema Mar, the master should say, because it's flammable. It's flammable. This is explosive in nature, it's dangerous. Mipnei shu of, and because it's dangerous, because the nature of this fuel is that it's flammable, it's not a good idea to use in a home setting. Now, I'll just add something which I didn't see anybody say, but just it occurs to me that we usually say chamira sakanta meisura. When there's something which we don't do because we believe that it's dangerous, it's even more of a concern than something we don't do because it's ritually prohibited. So if there's something, for example, that we don't do during Tisha B'Av because it's a pleasurable thing to do, or something we don't do because we feel that, you know, during this time we don't have as much protection and our mazel isn't as strong and there might be danger. So because there might be danger, that's more of a reason to be stringent even than the ritual observance. Right? In the language of the Gemara, chamira, which comes from the word chamur, more stringent, sakanta, from the Aramaic of sakana in Hebrew, is chamira, is even more stringent than isura, than something which is simply prohibited. So he said, you're worried about somebody violating Shabbat? I'm worried about somebody blowing themselves up. That's a bigger concern to me. Why wouldn't you be worried about that? So what does this mean exactly, and what are we concerned with? At this point, it's not exactly so clear. Let's take a look in Rashi and see what Rashi says. Rashi says, shuhu off. V'nidbak b'kois lehabayis. This could easily attach itself or reach or touch the walls of the home. And in doing so, umadlik et habayit. This could cause the house to go up in flames. That's pretty serious. Not a good idea. Anything which might cause, which is a fire hazard, would be a problem. So he says, you're worried about a Shabbat hazard? You're worried about maybe somebody would come to do something which is prohibited? I'm worried about a fire hazard. I'm worried about public safety. And why wouldn't you use that reason? Now, on a simple level, the reason that the Gemara uses this, suggests this one, is actually because in that case, you might not be able to use it during the weekdays either. He says, you're saying don't use tzari on Shabbos? He says, I'm saying don't use tzari altogether. Just ban it. Bad stuff. Fire hazard. Danger. Don't use it. That's all. The Tosfos says, the person will be in a home. First, the Tosfos explains how this would be a Shabbat concern. Somebody's worried. The yovel lechabes, and he might come to extinguish. So you're worried about people using some aromatic oil. I'm worried about a fire starting and then somebody putting out a fire, which would be much more direct. But the Tosfos says, that's the way Tosfos understands it in his first iteration. Tosfos says, why don't we just say we're afraid because it's a fire hazard? And you shouldn't be able to use it during the weekday either. And Tosfos brings a proof, because we say later on in the Gemara, you can't use neft loven, you can't use kerosene, gasoline. Don't light lamps with gasoline, because gasoline is simply too flammable. So why wouldn't we say, just like we say there, don't use it Shabbat or weekday, because it's flammable, why don't we say the same thing here? Don't use it because it's flammable. So in the final word, what the Tosfos is telling us is that Abaye's reasoning would be, Shabbat is a problem? It's a problem altogether. This is just a general problem. And in this case, and if you look at it through that prism of Tosfos, Abaye's question is almost not only on Rabba, it's really a question almost on Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. He's saying, why is it that you're saying one shouldn't use it on Friday nights? One shouldn't use it. It's flammable. This is just a bad idea. It's not a question of Friday night. It's not a question of a Shabbat table. So there's different ways to understand exactly what the issue here might be, whether we're worried about it's an additional Shabbat concern, or it's actually a fire hazard altogether, and therefore we shouldn't use it at all. The Ritva follows the approach that this is a problem altogether. We shouldn't use it altogether. So the Gemara says, okay, it's a good question. Chada v'oid ka'amar. I'll tell you why. The Gemara says here, what Rabba is telling us is one reason you shouldn't use it, even in the best of circumstances, and you shouldn't use it because it's just dangerous vis-a-vis Shabbat observance. It's very easy to cross the line and violate Shabbat. And then besides that, it's just dangerous. If they show off, it's just dangerous because it's flammable. Now, of course, you could ask a simple question. In that case, why do we need the first reasoning and then the second reasoning? Why don't we just stick with the first reasoning? The second reasoning. Just stick with the fact that it's a fire hazard altogether. There's... Interestingly, a number of different answers to why we might need this kind of added measure. I'll share with you some different answers that I saw. The Eliyahu Rabba, in the name of the Smag, Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, he suggests the reason we need two reasons is because there could be a possibility where nobody would ever dip into the oil and use it. And that's why you need the fire hazard reason. And there could be a circumstance where the fire hazard would not be a concern, but the aroma would still be an issue. What would that be? So the Eliyahu Rabba says like this, in the name of the Smag. If the lamp is a sconce, a wall sconce that's high up, nobody's going to reach it. Nobody's going to get up on a ladder to get to the sconce to be able to take a little bit of oil out. It's on the table. It's within reach. There's a problem. So he says you still shouldn't use it. Why? Because it's flammable. Conversely, there are ways to mitigate its flammability. How would you do that? You mix other oil or fuel into it. So you can, certain fuel is very flammable, certain fuel is not nearly as flammable or explosive. So if you mix the fuel, you could mitigate the danger attached to it, which we actually do. We do this when it comes to certain fuels which you use on camping trips. They're not pure kerosene. We don't use pure gasoline. They use fuel which is modified. Fuel which is some night tinkered with so that it's less dangerous, but it could still retain its aromatic nature. Just because you diluted the balsam, which means you would remove the fire hazard element, it doesn't mean that you have to lose the aroma. And therefore, we'd still have an issue. And that's why, says the Eliyahu Rabba, we need to have both reasons. The Sfas Emes has a different suggestion. He says, what would happen in an instance where somebody lit Shabbat candles with tzari? He shouldn't have. It was wrong. He did it. It's Friday night now. Can you sit by that table? So for the flammable reason, it is what it is. In fact, maybe it's better to sit by the table in case something happens. At least you're right there. That's not a reason not to. But the second reason, which is dip my hand in and take out some aromatic oil because I want some of the aroma, that would say to me, don't even sit at this table. So this is what we call in halacha, lechatchila and bidiyeved. The lechatchila to begin with is, they show off, it's flammable. The bidiyeved is, even in the event that I would have done this anyway, I still shouldn't sit by that Shabbat table. Why? Because it invites violations of Shabbat. It's so easy, so to speak, to go beyond and make that mistake. All right, the Gemara does something very, very unusual now. The Gemara tells us a story. You're looking at me. What's so unusual about that? Gemara always tells us stories. Yeah, but the Gemara usually tells us stories that we learn a lesson from. This story is about a mean-spirited, wicked mother-in-law who did something horrible to her daughter-in-law. And like, what lesson does that teach us? But listen to this. Listen to the story. Hahu chamsa dahave sino lo lekalosa. There was this mother-in-law who hated her daughter-in-law. A rarity. Very rarely happens such a thing, but it happened. Rashi says chamsa chamoisa or chamusa was a mother-in-law. So, but this mother-in-law really hated her daughter-in-law. She said, "Okay, I'm gonna get this girl." Amrulei, she said to her daughter-in-law, "Zil ikshit b'mishcha da'afar simana." She says, "I got some beautiful balsam for you. I brought you some beautiful perfume. Why don't you go, you know, perfume yourself, and why don't you use this oil of oivei, and you'll feel much better. It's really good for you." And you know, this nice girl didn't want to fight with her mother-in-law, so she took the oil and whatever. She kind of lubricated, oiled up, and you know, she's okay. And then her mother-in-law said to her, and she finished doing that, Azla ikshit, she went and used this cosmetics. Ki also, when she came, Amrulei zil itli shiraga. Please be so kind, go and light the flames, go light the candles. Rashi says, hadlik es haner. Go light the candles. I don't know if this is Friday night, not Friday, doesn't say, just light the candles. And the poor girl did. And she lit the candles. And infach ba nura ba achalte. And she caught on fire. And the Gemara tragically says she was like consumed. Yeah, this is like a real mother-in-law from hell. This is like a really bad mother-in-law who actually caused her daughter-in-law to be burned. I don't know if she died or just had burns. Okay, what in heaven is going on here? Why does the Gemara tell us this terrible story? But so we shouldn't think that not every Jewish person is nice, so we have some horrible Jewish people. First of all, it doesn't even say she was Jewish necessarily, but what we don't know. It's Friday night. It could be any candles. It was a mother-in-law. It could be anybody. What's the point of recording the story? So, as a rule, we don't get like a clear answer. Like none of the Mefarshim really comment on this. The only Mefarsh I found who comments is the Biuri Hagra. The Vilna Gaon says something very insightful. He says the Gemara defines the meaning of off. We heard b'pnei shu off. Okay, so what does that mean, b'pnei shu off? It's flammable. There really are two possibilities. When we talk about something that's flammable, we talk about something from which sparks can fly off. And when sparks fly, they sometimes can be the cause of fire. So you have these flares. You ever see flares they put up in the highway when there's an accident? It's like shooting sparks the whole time. They're flammable. Don't try that in your living room. Bad idea. Don't use that for Shabbos candles. Right? That's good in the outdoors where a ferocious wind is blowing and the snow is falling and the flare manages to keep burning, but it's not made for indoor use. So anything we have which is very flammable, which kind of gives off showers of sparks, could be dangerous. But then there's another possibility of off. The other possibility of off is fumes, flammable fumes. And this is the question. What is the meaning of flammable?
It's actually the fumes that catch fire, not the liquid.
That is correct. It's actually the fumes that the liquid is giving off.
Yeah, but even in gasoline, if you could get a match, a lit match into gasoline, without going through the fumes, it would not burn.
That is correct.
It's the fumes that burn.
The fumes that the gasoline emits,
yes,
are what causes the flammability and the explosion. That is absolutely correct. And that's why they say don't talk on your cell phone when you're filling up the gas, because there's actually fumes being emitted. There are stories of cell phones going bursting into fire. It's like scary stuff. Definitely not a good place to smoke.
Shucks.
Huh? Well, it's not good to smoke altogether, but definitely don't do it when you're filling up gas. Why? Because there are fumes. So the Vilna Gaon says, from here we could see that off means not sparks.
Fumes.
Off means fumes. The poor girl had fumes. It was actually very aromatic. We think of fumes as bad smelling. It was a beautiful aroma. Balsam is a very beautiful aroma. But the pleasant fume is still flammable. And that's why this poor girl actually blew up. She blew up. I guess her mother-in-law gave her some supercharged, very flammable balsam, which had maybe a great smell and also a terrible flammable property. And in the end, she exploded. And that's the meaning of the word in the Gemara, ba'achalte. It doesn't say she got burned. It says she was consumed. She blew up. So from that perspective, it makes sense for us to have this story mentioned, because this story actually is defining, it defines the meaning of off. And it gives us a sense of how dangerous this really could be. If you have oil that has fumes, even if they're mild fumes, the possibility of fumes, you don't want to be lighting Shabbos candles with that. That's really dangerous. that could cause an actual explosion. Okay, the Gemara now finishes off. Since we mentioned this business of Shemen Afarsama, and since we talked about Balsam and all that stuff, so before we go on to really what we could call a new piece of Gemara, the Gemara sends us off to a verse that's found in the book of Jeremiah that speaks about what might Balsam be. And it tells us that this was a unique Israeli product. The pasuk that the Gemara is now alluding to is found in the 52nd chapter of the book of Jeremiah. Yirmiyahu HaNavi says, and I quote, "Umidalus ha'aretz, from the poverty-stricken elements of the land, hisher nivuzradon rav tavachim, the mass murderer, mass slaughterer, nivuzradon." He wasn't in the meatpacking business, he was in the murder business. He was a mass murderer who killed millions of Jews. So he left over this monster, left over from the poor elements of Jewish society, l'chormim u'liyoygvim, for chormim and yoygvim. The Gemara says no. The Gemara quotes this pasuk. And I should tell you that on a literal level, so Rashi says that yogvim are those who dig ditches, those who dig in the ground. That's like a literal meaning. And the Metzuda Tzion says it's even more literal. He says, kermim comes from the word kramim, people who work in the vineyards. And yoygvim are people who dig. They dig in the field, ditches and whatever, any kind of holes that have to be. Huh?
Manual labor,
that's it. Diggers. So the Gemara doesn't like this interpretation, even though it sounds very literal. And one of the reasons that I saw the Gemara doesn't like this is because Nebuzradan, who was a terrible anti-Semite who hated Jews, why bother getting Jewish labor? You could import cheap labor from anywhere. Sancheriv had conquered the whole of the civilized world. Certainly all of Eurasia was under his thumb. Why did he need to have Jews? He hated the Jews. He wanted to exterminate the Jews. Why bother using Jewish labor? He could have had any slave labor. So therefore, the Gemara says, has a different interpretation, and Rashi alludes to this also. The Gemara says like this, Tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, who are chormim elu milakte afarsaman? These are people who would harvest the afarsaman, the balsam, rods or branches. But really, more importantly, not harvest the branches, because anybody could cut branches down, but apparently it was a fine science in being able to tap the wood just gently enough to have the resin come forward without losing the resin. So you don't want to destroy the balsam, but you want to be able to extract the resin. And to harvest that resin was a very difficult thing that required skilled and experienced labor. So Rashi here tells us l'chormim. L'chormim means l'shein ma'asfim. It comes from the terminology of gathering together. K'moy chormim alav es hakelim. Later on in the Perek of Rabbi Akiva, we have this business of chormim alav es hakelim, to gather together the vessels. In other words, this concept of chormim is like the idea of gathering. Now, gathering here doesn't mean in a crass or physical way to gather, but it really means to extract, to gather the little bits of this precious fuel or this precious oil, which required great talent and required experience. And that's what we refer to over here. That's the meaning of chormim alav esarkelim, that we're talking about people who would collect things. So these were the collectors. I think that would be the right terminology to use, collectors. So chormim are collectors. What kind of collectors? The collectors of this resin, which was harvested from the balsam. And Rabbi Yosef says, where was this found? He says, this was found in Ein Gedi, and it was found ad Ramsa. Rashi says, Ramsa is a shem makim, name of a place. All right, so how does this work? Where exactly are we now? So Ramsa is on the north area, the north shore of the Yam HaMelech. And that's where, of course, on the eastern side of the Jordan River. East on the Jordan River, not in what we call Ever HaYarden or Transjordan, but actually in Israel proper. And that's where the river empties into the sea, the Salt Sea. So this is up on the north, and this area where the balsam grew went all the way kind of around the oasis area around the Yam HaMelech, around the Salt Sea, and it went down into Ein Gedi, which is found on the west side of the Yam HaMelech. And that's where it is today. Ein Gedi is this marvelous oasis, which is not very far. It's not a far drive from Mitzada. You're in Mitzada, which is a windswept, empty area where nothing grows, and then you come upon Ein Gedi, which is this 15-minute drive in this beautiful oasis. And that's where the balsam used to grow. So this was a very specific product, a very geographic-specific product to a certain part of Israel. And apparently this was a valuable kind of thing, valuable substance. And Vozradin didn't want to lose out on this. And he was afraid if he brought in foreign laborers who weren't experienced, who didn't know how to harvest the resin, it wouldn't work. And even though he hated Jews, he loved money more. So because these people could do it, he took the poor, the poverty-stricken ones, the people who would be most submissive, and he just drafted them as slave laborers to gather the resin. All right, so now we know that this resin, this business we're talking about, is actually unique to Israel. We would not have known that otherwise. So he used them for chormim, which is the collectors of resin. And the Gemara says, the second purpose was for yoigvim. What's yoigvim? So he says, yoigvim elu tzayodai chalazin. These are the people who would capture the chilazon. Chilazon was a special fish. Correct. Special fish or worm whose blood could be used to produce a very, very unique form of dye, which would be used, correct, for the tchelet of the tzitzit, but it was also considered to be a certain royal color. And it was like European ermine. Tchelet was in the Middle East and beyond considered to be the color of royalty. So royalty wanted, it was very valuable. This is a very rare kind of dye, very rare color, very beautiful color. And because of that, chalazon was only to be found in the land of Israel. And because it was only to be found in the land of Israel, he figured he would be able to turn a tidy profit if he could get the people who were used to doing this to trap the chilazon and to bring it back. We'll see in a minute. Yes. So he says, L'yoigvim, Rashi says, is L'shein Yukovim. This comes from the terminology, not as much of a ditch, but rather of a cistern or a pit. Now, for example, in Hebrew, we call goyren ve'yekev. Goyren is where the silo where you keep the grain. Yekev is where the grapes that are squeezed where the juice is kept. That's the retention area for the grape juice or for the wine. And it comes from the word yekev. Yekev means a carved out area, a cistern. So yoigvim comes from the word yukovim. What you had to do was capture the chalazon, but apparently you had to split open the chalazon, get its blood, harvest its blood before it died, as it says in Perek Klal Gadol, which is later on page 75 of this tractate. And why did Vuzadon care about chalas when he was going into the tzitzis business? He hated Jews. So Rashi says, he nichon nevuzadon, this anti-Semite, made sure to keep that workforce in place, l'levusha hamelech. This was for royal clothing. So it was a rare dye, coveted, used by royalty, and therefore fetched a high price. So he had poor slave labor gather this. Where was it exactly? So the Gemara tells us that the trappers of chilazon had to be along the Mediterranean Sea, but in a very specific area of the Mediterranean Sea. That it was Tzayodei chalazon, those who would trap these sea creatures, or according to another Gemara, coming out of the off a mountain or something. Misulamais shel Tzur, from the ladders of Tzur, which is Tyre and Lebanon, va'ad Chefa, until Chefa, which is, you know, it's not super north, it's not Tzfait, it's not Tzfat, it's not Tveria, but it's not that south either. It's between Tveria and Tel Aviv, Yafo, and that was the area. So it's a slender area.
Tveria is the other way.
It's up north.
No, Tveria is on the...
Sorry. Tveria is inland. I apologize. Right. So we're talking here on the Mediterranean. Haifa is on the Mediterranean. North, it's relatively north of Tel Aviv, of Yafo, which was an ancient port city. Haifa was also an ancient port city.
Actually,
but you're talking about...
Akko
is further north.
Akko, which is on the other side, on the north side of the bay.
Yes.
That was the port city. Haifa was not a port city.
Okay. But it's on the ocean.
Yeah, it's on the
ocean. Yeah. Okay. So from Haifa, which is along the Mediterranean, you're talking about from southern Lebanon until the lower end of northern Israel, Haifa, which is almost central Israel, that was the area, that was the crescent, if you will, from which they would harvest these chilazon. Now, why is it called Sulama de Tzur? So Rashi says, Mailas Har, the pathways were like on a mountain steppa. They were very high up, uktsara, very narrow. Hamsila v'gavaya, which are very high and very narrow mountain pathways, which was like a ladder. The curtain, I say, you actually give us a French word that does nothing for me. But the point there here is that this is, it was called a ladder, but really it meant narrow mountain passes. So these the passes of Tyre, that's
fjord,
where...
A fjord,
if you say so. It seems to me that this is not
because there are fjords around that area.
But it seems to me this seems like a path that you travel. There's another medrash that says when Avraham Avinu entered the land of Israel, he came through the north. He came through Salome Shel Tzur. He came through the narrow mountain pass of Tzur.
Yeah, which would make sense.
Okay. And then he saw people working there and he was impressed with their work ethic. But the Gemara uses, the Medrash uses, not the Gemara, the Medrash is the same expression, Salome Shel Tzur. So that's the area from the narrow mountain passes of Tyre, of Tzur, straight down to Haifa. That was the area that it could be harvested from. So if this was the area where it could be harvested from, clearly you couldn't get this elsewhere. These were the professionals. You got to use your professionals. So Nebuzaradan kept the professionals because he wanted to be able to harvest these two substances, an aromatic substance, the resin from balsam, and the blood of the chilazon, fish or worm, some kind of sea creature, which was only found in the land of Israel. And the Chasam Sofer emphasized this. He explains that the point being made here is that both of these products were unique to the Holy Land of Israel. And because they were unique to the Holy Land of Israel, that's why Nebuzaradan realized the only people who he could use to continue these industries going would be the locals, the Jews who knew how to do this. Why does the Gemara introduce us to this piece of information? What is the point even? Well, I suppose since we talked about Tzari, so we can know that Tzari was something that was prolific once upon a time in Israel. It was something very valuable. We're hearing that it's flammable, but it's not a good idea to use as for fuel, but its aromatic properties were significant, and it was rare, which helps us really to understand why the Gemara's first reaction to the prohibition of using it on a Friday night would have something to do with its aroma, because this was a rare aromatic resin. And because of that, people would gravitate towards it, people would use it, which would make it a problem on the Shabbat when we're supposed to stay away from things like that, and so on and so forth. So that kind of pieces together the big picture, and now we know why we have this odd story of the wicked witch mother-in-law who burned her daughter or exploded her daughter, but that gives us an idea of its flammable element. And the second story really emphasizes the aromatic nature of the balsam, of the tzari. Why the stories are backwards, I don't know. Maybe it's because the Gemara told us a story about off and told us a story that explains what the meaning of off is. So the Gemara says, you know what? Once we're talking about the kind of flammability, let me talk to you about the aroma. And from this, and analyzing these verses of Yirmiyahu, we can understand how special, unique, and beautiful the aroma was and why this would have to be a takana, an injunction that was made. And with this, we will conclude tonight's class. And Bezrat Hashem will continue going back to the kind of fuel which might not be used, but this time not for dangerous purposes, but rather we go back to ritual or spiritual/ritual purposes of what can or cannot, should or should not be used for the Friday night candles, which bring such a beautiful ambiance and illumination to our Shabbat tables.
I think this is the lead-in.